Chapter 41. The Tears of a King. Despero found the king in the Pea's room, sitting on his daughter's bed, clutching the tapestry of her life to his chest. He was weeping, although weeping really is too small a word for the activity that the king had undertaken. Tears were cascading from his eyes. A small puddle had formed at his feet. I am not exaggerating. The king, it seemed, was intent on crying himself a river. Listener, have you ever seen a king cry? When the powerful are made weak, when they are revealed to be human, to have hearts, their diminishment is nothing short of terrifying. You can be sure that Despero was terrified. Absolutely. But he spoke up anyway. Sir, the mouse said to the king. But the king did not hear him, and as Despero watched, King Philip dropped the tapestry and took his great golden crown from his lap and used it to beat himself on the chest over and over again. The king, as I have already mentioned, had several faults. He was near-sighted. He made ridiculous, unreasonable, difficult-to-enforce laws. And, much in the way of Migory Sow, he was not exactly the sharpest knife in the drawer. But there was one extraordinary, wonderful, admirable thing about the king. He was a man who was able and willing to love with the whole of his heart. And just as he had loved the queen with the whole of his heart, so too he loved his daughter with the whole of it, even more than the whole. He loved the Princess Pea with every particle of his being, and she had been taken from him. But what Despero had come to say to the king had to be said, and so he tried again. "Excuse me," he said. He wasn't certain really how a mouse should address a king. "Sir" did not seem like a big enough word. Despero thought about it for a long moment. He cleared his throat. He spoke as loudly as he was capable of speaking. "Excuse me, most very honoured head person." King Philip stopped beating his crown against his chest. He looked around the room. "Down here, most very honoured head person," said Despero. The king, tears still falling from his eyes, looked at the floor. He squinted.
"Is that a bug speaking to me?" he asked.
"No," said Despero. "I am a mouse. We met before."
"A mouse!" bellowed the king. "A mouse is but one step removed from a rat."
"Sir,"
said Despero, "most very honoured head person, please, you have to listen to me. This is important. I know where your daughter is."
"You do?"
said the king. He sniffed. He blew his nose on his royal cloak.
"Where?"
he said, and as he bent over to look more closely at Despero, one tear, two tears, three enormous king-sized tears fell with an audible plop onto Despero's head and rolled down his back, washing away the white of the flower and revealing his own brown fur.
"Sir, most very honoured head person, sir,"
said Despero, as he wiped the king's tears out of his own eyes.
"She's in the dungeon."
"Liar,"
said the king. He sat back up.
"I knew it. All rodents are liars and thieves. She is not in the dungeon. My men have searched the dungeon."
"But no one really knows the dungeon except the rats, sir. There are thousands of places where she could be hidden, and only the rats would know. Your men would never be able to find her if the rats did not want her found."
"Ach,"
said the king, and he clapped his hands over his ears.
"Do not speak to me of rats and what they know," he shouted. "Rats are illegal. Rats are against the law. There are no rats in my kingdom. They do not exist."
"Sir, most very honoured head person, that is not true. Hundreds of rats live in the dungeon of this castle. One of them has taken your daughter, and if you will send—"
The king started humming.
"I can't hear you,"
he stopped to shout.
"I cannot hear you. And anyway, what you say is wrong, because you are a rodent, and therefore a liar."
He started to hum again, and then he stopped and said,
"I have hired fortune-tellers and a magician. They are coming from a distant land. They will tell me where my beautiful daughter is. They will speak the truth. A mouse cannot speak the truth."
"I am telling you the truth," said Despero. "I promise."
But the king would not listen. He sat with his hands over his ears. He hummed loudly. Big, fat tears rolled down his face and fell to the floor. Despero sat and stared at him in dismay. What should he do now? He put a nervous paw up to his neck and pulled at the red thread, and suddenly his dream came flooding back to him, the dark and the light, and the knight swinging his sword, and the terrible moment when he had realized that the suit of armor was empty. And then, listener, as he stood before the king, a wonderful, amazing thought occurred to the mouse. What if the suit of armour had been empty for a reason? What if it had been empty because it was waiting for him? "You know me," that was what the knight in his dream had said. "Yes," said Despereaux out loud in wonder, "I do know you."
"I can't hear you," sang the king.
"I'll have to do it myself," said the mouse. "I will be the knight in shining armour. There is no other way. It has to be me."
Despereaux turned. He left the weeping king. He went to find the Thread Master. Chapter 42. The Rest of the Thread. The Thread Master was sitting atop his spool of thread, swinging his tail back and forth, and eating a piece of celery.
"Well, look here," he said when he saw Despereaux. "Would you just look at that? It's the mouse who loved a human princess back from the dungeon in one piece. The old Thread Master would say that I didn't do my job well, that because you are still alive I must have tied the thread incorrectly. But it is not so. And how do I know it is not so? Because the thread is still around your neck." He nodded and took a bite of his celery.
"I need the rest of it," said Despereaux.
"The rest of what? Your neck?"
"The rest of the thread."
"Well, I can't just hand it over to any old mouse," said the Threadmaster.
"They say red thread is special, sacred, though I myself, after having spent so much time with it, know it for what it is."
"What is it?" said Despereaux.
"Thread,"
said the Threadmaster. He shrugged and took another loud bite of celery.
"Nothing more, nothing less.
But I pretend, friend, I pretend. And what, may I ask, do you intend to do with the thread?"
"Save the princess."
"Ah, yes, the princess, the beautiful princess. That's how this whole story started, isn't it?"
"I have to save her. There is no one but me to do it."
"It seems to be that way with most things. No one to do the really disagreeable jobs except oneself."
"And how, exactly, will you use a spool of thread to save a princess?"
"A rat has taken her and hidden her in the dungeon, so I have to go back to the dungeon, and it's full of twists and turns and hidden chambers."
"Like a maze,"
said the Threadmaster.
"Yes, like a maze, and I have to find my way to her, wherever she is hidden, and then I have to lead her back out again, and the only way to do that is with the thread. Gregory the jailer tied a rope around his ankle so that he would not get lost."
As the mouse said this, he shuddered, thinking of Gregory and his broken rope, dying, lost in the darkness.
"I," said Despereaux, I will use thread."
The Threadmaster nodded.
I see, he said.
He took a meditative bite of celery.
"You, friend, are on a quest."
"I don't know what that is," said Despereaux.
"You don't have to know. You just have to feel compelled to do the thing, the impossible, important task at hand."
"Impossible?" said Despereaux.
"Impossible," said the Threadmaster. "Important."
He sat, chewing his celery and staring somewhere past Despereaux, and then suddenly he leapt off his spool.
"Who am I to stand in the way of a quest?" he said. "Roll her away."
"I can have it."
"Yes, for your quest."
Despereaux put his front paws up and touched the spool. He gave it an experimental push forward.
"Thank you,"
he said, looking into the eye of the Threadmaster.
"I don't know your name."
"Hovis."
"Thank you, Hovis. There's something else, something that belongs with the thread."
Hovis went into a corner and came back with a needle.
"You can use it for protection."
"Like a sword," said Despereaux, "like a knight would have."
"Yes,"
said Hovis. He gnawed off a length of thread and used it to tie the needle around Despereaux's waist.
"Like so."
"Thank you, Hovis," said Despereaux.
He put his right shoulder against the spool of thread and pushed it forward again.
"Wait,"
said Hovis. He stood up on his hind legs, put his paws on Despereaux's shoulders, and leaned in close to him. Despereaux smelled the sharp, clean scent of celery as the Threadmaster bent his head, took hold of the thread around Despereaux's neck in his sharp teeth, and pulled on it hard.
"There,"
said Hovis, when the piece of thread broke and dropped to the ground.
"Now you're free. You see, you're not going into the dungeon because you have to. You're going because you choose to."
"Yes," said Despereaux, "because I am on a quest."
The word felt good and right in his mouth. Quest. Say it, listener. Say the word quest out loud. It is an extraordinary word, isn't it? So small and yet so full of wonder, so full of hope.
Goodbye,
said Hovis, as Despero pushed the spool of thread out of the threadmaster's hole.
I have never known a mouse who has made it out of the dungeon, only to go back into it again. Goodbye, friend. Goodbye, mouse among mice.
Chapter 43. What Cook Was Stirring. That night, Despero rolled the thread from the threadmaster's lair along innumerable hallways and down three flights of stairs. Listener, allow me to put this in perspective for you. Your average house mouse, or castle mouse, if you will, weighs somewhere in the neighbourhood of 4 ounces. Despero, as you well know, was in no way average. In fact, he was so incredibly small that he weighed about half of what the average mouse weighs, 2 ounces. That is all. Think about it. He was nothing but 2 ounces of mouse pushing a spool of thread that weighed almost as much as he did. Honestly, listener, what do you think the chances are of such a small mouse succeeding in his quest? Zip. Zero. Nada. Goose eggs. But you must, when you are calculating the odds of the mouse's success, factor in his love for the princess. Love, as we have already discussed, is a powerful, wonderful, ridiculous thing capable of moving mountains. And spools of thread. Even with the love and purpose in his heart, Despero was very, very tired when he reached the door to the castle kitchen at midnight. His paws were shaking and his muscles were jumping and the place where his tail should be was throbbing. And he still had a very, very long way to go, into the kitchen and down the many stairs of the dungeon, and then through, somehow, some way, through the rat-filled darkness of the dungeon itself, not knowing where he was going. And, oh, listener, when he stopped to consider what lay ahead of him, Despero was filled with an icky feeling of despair. He leaned his head against the spool of thread, and he smelled celery there, and he thought of Hovis, and how Hovis seemed to believe in him and his quest. So the mouse raised his head and squared his shoulders and pushed the spool of thread forward again into the kitchen, where he saw, too late, that there was a light burning. Despero froze. Cook was in the kitchen. She was bent over the stove. She was stirring something. Was it a sauce? No. Was it a stew? No. What Cook was stirring was soup. Soup, listener, in the king's own castle, against the king's law, right under the king's very nose, Cook was making soup. As the mouse looked on, Cook put her face into the steam rising from the pot and took a deep breath. She smiled a beatific smile, and the steam rose around her and caught the light of the candle and made a halo over her head. Despero knew how Cook felt about mice in her kitchen. He remembered quite clearly her instructions to Mig regarding himself. Kill him. The only good mouse is a dead mouse. But he had to go through Cook's kitchen to get to the dungeon door, and he had no time to waste. Soon daylight would dawn, and the whole castle would be awake, and a mouse would have no chance at all of pushing a spool of thread across the floor without attracting a great deal of attention. He would have to sneak past the mouse-hating Cook now. And so, screwing his courage to the sticking place, Despero leaned against the spool of thread and set it rolling across the floor. Cook turned from the stove, a dripping spoon in her hand and a frightened look on her face, and shouted, "Who's there?" Chapter 44. Whose ears are those?
"Who's there?"
shouted Cook again. Despero wisely said nothing. The kitchen was silent. "Hm," said Cook. "Nothing. It's nothing at all. Just my nervous Nelly ears playing tricks on me."
"You're an old fool," she said to herself as she turned back to the stove. "You're just an old fool afraid of being caught making soup."
Despero slumped against the spool of thread, and as he leaned there, his heart pounding, his paws shaking, a small, wonderful something occurred. A midnight breeze entered the kitchen and danced over to the stove and picked up the scent of the soup and then swirled across the floor and delivered the smell right directly to the mouse's nose. Despero put his head up in the air. He sniffed some more. He had never in his life smelled anything so lovely, so inspiring. With each sniff he took, he felt himself growing stronger, braver. Cook leaned in close to the kettle and put the spoon in and took the spoon out and blew upon the spoon and then brought it to her lips and sipped and swallowed. She said. She took another sip. Missing something, she said. More salt, maybe. She put the spoon down and took up an enormous salt shaker and sprinkled salt into the kettle. And Despereaux, feeling emboldened by the smell of soup, again set to work pushing the spool of thread. Quickly, he said to himself, rolling the spool across the floor. Do it quickly. Do not think. Just push. Cook whirled, the salt shaker in her hand, and shouted, Who goes there? Despereaux stopped pushing. He hid behind the spool of thread as Cook took the candle from the stove and held it up high. She said. The candlelight came closer, closer. What's this? The light came to rest directly on Despereaux's big ears, sticking up from behind the spool of thread. Oh, said Cook. Whose ears are those? And the light from the candle then shone full in Despereaux's face. A mouse, said Cook. A mouse in my kitchen. Despereaux closed his eyes. He prepared for his death. He waited, listener, and waited. And then he heard the sound of laughter. He opened his eyes and looked at Cook.
Ho, said Cook. Ho, he, for the first time in my life, I am glad to see a mouse in my kitchen.
Why? She asked. Why am I glad?
Ho, he, because a mouse is not a king's man here to punish me for making soup. That is why, because a mouse is not a king's man here to take me to the dungeon for owning a spoon. Ho, he, a mouse, I, Cook, am glad to see a mouse.
Cook's face was red and her stomach was shaking.
Ho, he, she said again, and not just any mouse, a mouse with a needle tied around his waist, a mouse with no tail, ain't it lovely, ho, he.
She shook her head and wiped at her eyes.
Look, mouse, these are extraordinary times, and because of that, we must have some peace between us. I will not ask what you are doing in my kitchen, and you, in return, will tell no one what I am cooking.
She turned then and went back to the stove, and set down the candle, and picked up the spoon, and again put it in the pot of soup, and took it back out, and tasted the soup, smacking her lips together.
Not right, she said. Not quite right. Missing something. Still.
Despereaux did not move. He could not move. He was paralyzed by fear. He sat on the kitchen floor. One small tear fell out of his left eye. He had expected Cook to kill him. Instead, listener, she had laughed at him. And he was surprised how much her laughter hurt. Chapter 45. Some Soup. Cook stirred the soup, and then put the spoon down, and held up the candle, and looked over at Despereaux.
"What are you waiting for?" she said. "Go, go, go! There will never be another opportunity for a mouse to escape from my kitchen unharmed!"
The smell of soup again wafted in Despereaux's direction. He put his nose up in the air. His whiskers trembled.
"Yes," said Cook, "that is soup that you are smelling. The princess, not that you would know or care, is missing, bless her good-hearted self. And times are terrible. And when times are terrible, soup is the answer. Don't it smell like the answer?
Yes, said Despereaux. He nodded. Cook turned away from him. She put the candle down and picked up her spoon and started to stir.
Oh, she said, these are dark days.
She shook her head.
And I'm kidding myself. There ain't no point in making soup unless others eat it. Soup needs another mouth to taste it, another heart to be warmed by it.
She stopped stirring. She turned and looked at Despereaux.
Mouse, said Cook, would you like some soup?
And then, without waiting for an answer, she took a saucer and spooned some soup into it and set it on the kitchen floor.
Come closer, she said. I don't aim to hurt you, I promise.
Despereaux sniffed. The soup smelled wonderful, incredible. Keeping one eye on Cook, he stepped out from behind the spool of thread and crept closer.
Go on, said Cook. Taste it.
Despereaux stepped onto the saucer. Soup covered his paws. He bent his head to the hot broth. He sipped. Oh, it was lovely. garlic and chicken and watercress, the same soup that cook had made the day the queen died.
"How is it?" asked cook anxiously.
"Wonderful," said Despereaux.
"Too much garlic?"
said cook, wringing her fat hands.
"No," said Despereaux. "It's perfect."
Cook smiled.
"See," she said, "there ain't a body, be it mouse or man, that ain't made better by a little soup."
Despereaux bent his head and sipped again, and cook stood over him and smiled, saying,
"It don't need a thing, then? Is that what you're saying? It's just right."
Despereaux nodded. He drank the soup in big, noisy gulps, and when he stepped out of the saucer, his paws were damp, and his whiskers were dripping, and his stomach was full.
Cook said to him, "Not done already, are you? Surely you ain't done. You must want more."
"I can't," said Despereaux. "I don't have time. I'm on my way to the dungeon to save the princess."
"Ho he," cook laughed. "You, a mouse, are going to save the princess?"
"Yes," said Despereaux. "I'm on a quest."
"Well, don't let me stand in your way."
And so it was that cook held open the door to the dungeon while Despereaux rolled the spool of thread through it.
"Good luck," she said to him. "Ho he, good luck saving the princess."
She closed the door behind her and then leaned against it and shook her head.
"And if that ain't an indication of what strange days these are," she said to herself, "then I don't know what is. Me, cook, feeding a mouse soup, and then wishing him good luck in saving the princess. Oh, my, strange days indeed."
Chapter 46 Mouse Blood, Yes. Despereaux stood at the top of the dungeon stairs and peered into the darkness that waited for him below.
"Oh," he said, "oh my."
He had forgotten how dark of the dungeon could be, and he had forgotten, too, its terrible smell, the stench of rats, the odour of suffering. But his heart was full of love for the princess, and his stomach was full of cook's soup, and Despereaux felt brave and strong. And so he began immediately, without despair, the hard work of manoeuvring the spool of thread down the narrow dungeon steps. Down, down, down went Despereaux Tilling and the spool of thread. Slowly, oh, so slowly they went. And the passage was dark, dark, dark.
"I will tell myself a story," said Despereaux. "I will make some light. Let's see. It will begin this way. Once upon a time there was a mouse who was very, very small, exceptionally small, and there was a beautiful human princess whose name was P, and it so happened that this mouse was the one who was selected by fate to serve the princess, to honour her, and to save her from the darkness of a terrible dungeon."
This story cheered up Despereaux considerably. His eyes became accustomed to the gloom, and he moved down the stairs more quickly, more surely, whispering to himself the tale of a devious rat and a fat serving girl and a beautiful princess and a brave mouse and some soup and a spool of red thread. It was a story, in fact, very similar to the one you are listening to right now, and the telling of it gave Despereaux strength. He pushed the spool of thread with a great deal of gusto. And the thread, eager perhaps to begin its honourable task of aiding in the saving of a princess, leapt forward and away from the mouse, and went down the dungeon stairs ahead of him, without him.
"No!" cried Despereaux. "No, no, no!"
He broke into a trot, chasing the thread through the darkness. But the spool had a head start, and it was faster. It flew down the dungeon stairs, leaving Despereaux far behind. When it came to the end of the stairs, it rolled and rolled, until finally, lazily, it came to a stop right at the gnarled paw of a rat.
"What have we here?" said the one-eared rat to the spool of thread. "I will tell you what we have," said Botticelli Rumorso, answering his own question. "We have red thread. How delightful! Red thread means one thing to a rat."
He put his nose up in the air. He sniffed. He sniffed again.
"I smell. Could it be? Yes, most definitely it is. Soup. How strange."
He sniffed some more.
"And I smell tears. Human tears. delightful. And I also detect the smell. He put his nose high into the air and took a big whiff of flour and oil. Oh, my, what a cornucopia of scents. But below it all, what do I smell? The blood of a mouse. Unmistakably mouse blood. Yes, ha ha ha. Exactly. Mouse.
Botticelli looked down at the spool of thread and smiled. He gave it a gentle push with one paw.
Red thread. Yes, exactly. Just when you think that life in the dungeon cannot get any better, a mouse arrives.
Chapter 47. No Choice. Despereaux stood trembling on the steps. The thread was most definitely gone. He could not hear it. He could not see it. He should have tied it to himself when he had the chance. But it was too late now. Despereaux's dire situation suddenly became quite clear to him. He was a 2-ounce mouse, alone in a dark, twisting dungeon full of rats. He had nothing but a sewing needle with which to defend himself. He had to find a princess, and he had to save her once he found her.
"It's impossible," he said to the darkness. "I can't do it."
He stood very still.
"I'll go back," he said.
But he didn't move.
"I have to go back."
He took a step backward.
"But I can't go back. I don't have a choice. I have no choice."
He took one step forward and then another.
"No choice,"
his heart beat out to him as he went down the stairs.
"No choice. No choice. No choice."
At the bottom of the stairs, the rat, Botticelli, sat waiting. And when Despereaux stepped from the last stair onto the dungeon floor, Botticelli called out to him as if he were a long-lost friend.
"Ah," said Botticelli, "there you are. Exactly. I've been waiting for you."
Despereaux saw the dark shape of a rat, that thing that he had feared and dreaded for so long, finally step out of the gloom and come to greet him.
"Welcome, welcome," said Botticelli.
Despereaux put his paw on the needle.
"Ah," said Botticelli, "you are armed. How charming."
He put his paws up in the air.
"I surrender." "Oh, yes, certainly, exactly, I surrender."
"I," said Despereaux.
"Yes," said Botticelli, "you."
He took the locket from around his neck. He began to swing it back and forth.
"Please, go on."
"I don't want to hurt you," said Despereaux. "I just need to get by you. I am on a quest."
"Really?" said Botticelli. "How extraordinary! A mouse on a quest!"
Back and forth went the locket.
"A quest for what?"
"A quest to save the princess."
"The princess," said Botticelli. "The princess, the princess. Everything seems to be about the princess these days. The king's men were down here searching for her, you know. They didn't find her. That goes without saying. But now a mouse has arrived, and he is on a quest to save the princess."
"Yes," said Despereaux.
He took a step to the left of Botticelli.
"How inspiring," said Botticelli.
He lazily took a step to his right, blocking Despereaux's way.
"Why the hurry, little friend?"
"Because," said Despereaux, "I have to."
"Yes, yes, you have to save the princess." "Exactly. But before you save her, you must find her, correct?"
"Yes,"
said Despereaux.
"What if," said Botticelli, "what if I told you that I know exactly where the princess is? What if I told you that I could take you right directly to her?"
Said Despereaux. His voice shook. His paw on the needle trembled.
"Why would you do that?"
"Why would I do that? Why would I help you? Why? To be of service. To do my part for humanity. To aid in the saving of a princess."
"But you are a rat,"
supplied Botticelli.
"Yes, I am a rat, and I see by your trembling that the greatly exaggerated rumors of our evil nature have reached your oversized ears."
"Yes,"
said Despereaux.
"If," said Botticelli, swinging the locket back and forth, "if you allow me to be of assistance, you will be doing me a tremendous favor. Not only can I do a good deed for you and for the princess, but my actions will help to dispel this terrible myth of evil that seems to surround rats everywhere. Will you let me assist you?" Will you let me assist myself and my kind?
Listener, was it a trick?
Of course it was.
Botticelli did not want to be of service?
Far from it. You know what Botticelli wanted. He wanted others to suffer. Specifically, he wanted this small mouse to suffer.
How best to do that? Why, take him right directly to what he wanted, the princess. Let him see what his heart desired, and then, and only then, faced with what he loved, would Despero die. And at the end of it all, how tasty the mouse would be, seasoned with hope and tears and flour and oil and thwarted love.
My name, little friend, is Botticelli Remorso, and you may trust me. You must trust me.
Will you tell me your name?
Despero. Despero Tilling.
Despero Tilling, take your paw from your weapon. Come with me.
Despero stared at him.
Come, come, said Botticelli. Let go of your needle. Take hold of my tail. I will lead you to your princess. I promise.
What, listener, in your experience, is the promise of a rat worth? That's right. Zero. Zip. Nada. Goose eggs. But I must ask you this question, too. What else was there for Despero to hold on to? You're right again. Nothing. And so the mouse reached out. He took hold of the rat's tail.
Chapter 48. On the Tail of a Rat.
Have you ever had hold of the tail of a rat? At best, it is an unpleasant sensation, scaly and cold, similar to holding on to a small, narrow snake. At worst, when you are dependent upon a rat for your survival, and when a part of you is certain that you are being led nowhere except to your death, it is a hideous sensation, indeed, to have nothing but a rat's tail to cling to. Nonetheless, Despero held on to Botticello Remorso, and the rat led him deeper and deeper into the dungeon. Despero's eyes had, by this point, adjusted quite well to the darkness, though it would have been better if they had not, for the things he saw made him shiver and shake. What did he see? He saw that the floor of the dungeon was littered with tufts of fur, knots of red thread, and the skeletons of mice. Everywhere there were tiny white bones glowing in the darkness, and he saw, in the dungeon tunnels through which Botticelli led him, the bones of human beings, too, grinning skulls and delicate finger bones rising up out of the darkness and pointing toward some truth best left unspoken. Despero closed his eyes. But it didn't help. He saw, as if his eyes were still open, wide, the bones, the tufts of hair, the knots of thread, the despair.
"Ha-ha! Exactly!"
Botticelli laughed as he negotiated the twists and turns.
"Oh, yes, exactly."
If what was in front of Despero was too horrible to contemplate, what followed behind him was, perhaps, even worse. Rats, a happy, hungry, vengeful parade of rats, their noses up in the air, sniffing, sniffing.
"Mouse!" sang out one rat joyfully.
"Yes, oh yes, mouse!" agreed another.
"But something else too."
"Soup!"
called out another rat.
"Yes, soup!"
the others agreed.
"Blood!"
sang a rat.
"Blood!"
they all agreed together. And then they sang,
"Here, mousey, mousey, mousey! Here, little mousey!"
Botticelli called out to the other rats.
"Mine!" he said. "This little treasure is all mine, gentlemen and ladies. Please, I beg you, do not infringe on my discovery."
"Mr. Remorso," said Despero.
He turned and looked behind him and saw the rats, their red eyes and their smiling mouths. He closed his eyes again. He kept them closed.
"Mr. Remorso!"
he shouted.
"Yes," said Botticelli.
"Mr. Remorso!"
said Despero, and he was crying now. He couldn't help it.
"Please, the princess?"
"Tears!"
shouted the rats. "We smell tears, Mousy. We do!"
"Please!"
shouted Despero.
"Little friend," said Botticelli. "Little Despero Tilling, I promised you, and I will keep that promise."
The rat stopped.
"Look ahead of you," he said. "What do you see?"
Despero opened his eyes.
"Light,"
he said.
"Exactly," said Botticelli. "Light."
Chapter 49.
"What do you want, Miggery Sow?"
Again, listener, we must go forward before we go backward. We must consider for a moment what had occurred with the rat and the serving girl and the princess down in the dungeon before Despereaux made his way to them. What happened was this. Roscuro led the pea and Mig deep into the dungeon to a hidden chamber, and there he directed Mig to put the princess in chains.
"Gaw," said Mig, "she's going to have a hard time learning her lessons if she's all chained up like."
"Do as I say," said Roscuro.
"Maybe," said Mig, "before I lock her up, her and me could switch outfits, so we could start in already with her being me and me being a princess."
"Oh, yes," said Roscuro, "certainly, a wonderful idea, Miss Miggery. Princess, take off your crown and give it to the serving girl."
The pea sighed and took off her crown and handed it to Mig, and Mig put it on, and it slid immediately right down her small head and came to rest quite painfully on her poor, abused ears.
"It's a biggish thing," she said, "and painful-like."
"Well, well," said Roscuro.
"How do I look?"
Mig asked, smiling at him.
"Ridiculous," he said. "Laughable."
Mig stood, blinking back tears.
"You mean I don't look like a princess?" she said to the rat.
"I mean," said Roscuro, "you will never look like a princess, no matter how big a crown you put on your tiny head. You look exactly like the fool you are and always will be. Now make yourself useful and chain the princess up. Dress-up time is over."
Mig sniffed and wiped at her eyes and then bent to look at the pile of chains and locks on the floor.
"And now, princess," he said, "I'm afraid that the time for your truth has arrived. I will now tell you what your future holds. As you consign me to darkness, so I consign you, too, to a life spent in this dungeon."
Mig looked up.
"Ain't she going upstairs to be a serving maid?"
"No," said Roscuro.
"Ain't I going to be a princess, then?"
"No," said Roscuro.
"But I want to be a princess."
"No one," said Roscuro, "cares what you want." As you know, listener, Miggery Sow had heard this sentiment expressed many times in her short life, but now, in the dungeon, it hit her full force. The rat was right. No one cared what she wanted. No one had ever cared, and perhaps worst of all, no one ever would care.
"I want," cried Mig.
"Shh," said the princess.
"Shut up," said the rat.
"I want," sobbed Mig. I want.
"What do you want, Mig?" the princess said softly.
"Eh?"
shouted Mig.
"What do you want, Miggery Sow?"
the princess shouted.
"Don't ask her that," said Roscuro. "Shut up! Shut up!"
But it was too late. The words had been said, the question at last had been asked. The world stopped spinning, and all of creation held its breath, waiting to hear what it was that Miggery Sow wanted.
"I want,"
said Mig.
"Yes,"
shouted the pea.
"I want my ma,"
cried Mig into the silent, waiting world.
"I want my ma."
"Oh," said the princess. She held out her hand to Mig. Mig took hold of it.
"I want my mother too,"
said the princess softly, and she squeezed Mig's hand.
"Stop it,"
shouted Roscuro. "Chain her up! Chain her up!"
"Gaw," said Mig. "I ain't gonna do it. You can't make me do it. I got the knife, don't I?"
She took the knife and held it up.
"If you have any sense at all," said Roscuro, "and I heartily doubt that you do, you will not use that instrument on me. Without me, you will never find your way out of the dungeon, and you will starve to death here, or worse."
"Go," said Mig. "Then lead us out now, or I will chop you up into little rat bits."
"No," said Roscuro. "The princess shall stay here in the darkness, and you, Mig, will stay with her."
"But I want to go upstairs," said Mig.
"I'm afraid that we are stuck here, Mig," shouted the princess, "unless the rat has a change of heart and decides to lead us out."
"There will be no changes of heart," said Roscuro. "None."
"Go,"
said Mig. She lowered the knife. And so the rat and the princess and the serving girl sat together in the dungeon, as outside the castle the sun rose and moved through the sky and sank to the earth again, and night fell. They sat together until the candle had burned out and another one had to be lit. They sat together in the dungeon. They sat and sat. And, listener, truthfully, they might be sitting there still if a mouse had not arrived.
Chapter 50, in which the princess says his name.
"Princess!" Despero shouted. "Princess! I have come to save you!"
The Princess P heard her name. She looked up.
"Despero!" she whispered. And then she shouted it.
"Despero!"
Listener, nothing is sweeter in this sad world than the sound of someone you love calling your name. Nothing. For Despero, the sound was worth everything. His lost tail, his trip to the dungeon and back out of it and back into it again. He ran toward the princess. But Roscuro, baring his teeth, blocked the mouse's way. The princess cried,
"Oh, no, Rat, please don't hurt him. He is my friend."
Mig said,
"Don't worry, princess. I will save the Missy."
She took the kitchen knife. She aimed to cut off the rat's head. But she missed her mark.
"Whoopsie,"
said Miggery Sow.
Chapter 51. What is that smell?
"Ow!"
screamed Roscuro. He turned to look at where his tail had been, and as he did, Despero drew his needle and placed the sharp tip of it right where the rat's heart should be.
"Don't move," said Despero. "I will kill you."
"Ha ha ha," Botticelli laughed from the sidelines. "Exactly."
He slapped his tail on the floor in approval.
"Absolutely delightful. A mouse is going to kill a rat. Oh, all of this is much better than I anticipated. I love it when mice come to the dungeon."
"Let me see,"
said the other rats, pushing and shoving.
"Stand back," Botticelli told them, still laughing. "Let the mouse do his work."
Despero held the trembling needle against Roscuro's heart. The mouse knew that as a knight it was his duty to protect the princess. But would killing the rat really make the darkness go away? Despero bowed his head ever so slightly, and as he did so, his whiskers brushed against the rat's nose. Roscuro sniffed.
"What is that smell?" he asked.
"Mousy blood," shouted one rat. "Blood and bones," shouted another.
"You're smelling tears," said Botticelli. "Tears and thwarted love."
"Exactly," said Roscuro. "And yet there's something else."
He sniffed again, and the smell of soup crashed through his soul like a great wave, bringing with it the memory of light, the chandelier, the music, the laughter, everything, all the things that were not, would never, could never be available to him as a rat.
"Soup,"
moaned Roscuro, and he began to cry.
"Boo," shouted Botticelli.
"Sss," hissed the other rats.
"Kill me,"
said Roscuro. He fell down before Despero.
"It will never work. All I wanted was some light. That is why I brought the princess here, really, just for some beauty. Some light of my own."
"Please," shouted Botticelli, "do kill him. He is a miserable excuse for a rat."
"No, Despero," said the princess. "Don't kill him." Despero lowered his needle. He turned and looked at the pea.
"Boo!" shouted Botticelli again. "Kill him! Kill him! All this goodness is making me sick! I've lost my appetite!"
"Gaw!"
shouted Mig, waving her knife.
"I'll kill him!"
"No, wait," said the princess.
"Roscuro?" she said to the rat.
"What?"
he said. Tears were falling out of his eyes and creeping down his whiskers and dripping onto the dungeon floor. And then the princess took a deep breath and put a hand on her heart. I think, listener, that she was feeling the same thing that Despero had felt when he was faced with his father, begging him for forgiveness. That is, P was aware suddenly of how fragile her heart was, how much darkness was inside it, fighting always with the light. She did not like the rat. She would never like the rat, but she knew what she must do to save her own heart. And so, here are the words that the princess spoke to her enemy. She said, "Roscuro, would you like some soup?" The rat sniffed.
"Don't torment me," he said.
"I promise you," said the princess, "that if you lead us out of here, I will get cook to make you some soup. And you can eat it in the banquet hall."
"Speaking of eating," shouted one of the rats, "give us the mousey."
"Yeah," shouted another, "hand over the mouse."
"Who would want him now?" said Botticelli. "The flavor of him will be ruined."
All that forgiveness and goodness, blech. I, for one, am leaving.
Soup? In the banquet hall? Roscuro asked the princess.
Yes, said the pea.
Really?
Truly, I promise.
Gaw! Shouted Mig. Soup is illegal.
But soup is good, said Despero.
Yes, said the pea.
Isn't it?
The princess bent down before the mouse.
You are my knight, she said to him, with a shining needle, and I am so glad that you found me. Let's go upstairs. Let's eat some soup.
And, listener, they did. Chapter 52 Happily Ever After. But the question you want answered, I know, is did they live happily ever after? Yes. And no. What of Roscuro? Did he live happily ever after? Well, the Princess P gave him free access to the upstairs of the castle, and he was allowed to go back and forth from the darkness of the dungeon to the light of the upstairs. But, alas, he never really belonged in either place. The sad fate, I'm afraid, of those whose hearts break and then mend in crooked ways. But the rat, in seeking forgiveness, did manage to shed some small light, some happiness, into another life. How? Roscuro, listener, told the princess about the prisoner who had once owned a red tablecloth, and the princess saw to it that the prisoner was released. And Roscuro led the man up out of the dungeon and to his daughter, Mig Risau. Mig, as you might have guessed, did not get to be a princess, but her father, to atone for what he had done, treated her like one for the rest of his days. And what of Despero? Did he live happily ever after? Well, he did not marry the princess, if that is what you mean by happily ever after. Even in a world as strange as this one, a mouse and a princess cannot marry. But, listener, they can be friends. And they were. Together, they had many adventures. Those adventures, however, are another story. And this story, I'm afraid, must now draw to a close. But, before you leave, listener, imagine this. Imagine an adoring king and a glowing princess, a serving girl with a crown on her head, and a rat with a spoon on his, all gathered around a table in a banquet hall. In the middle of the table there is a great kettle of soup. Sitting in the place of honor, right next to the princess, is a very small mouse with big ears. And peeking out from behind a dusty velvet curtain, looking in amazement at the scene before them, are four other mice.
Mon Dieu! Look, look! Says Antoinette. He lives! He lives! And he seems such the happy mouse!
Forgiven, whispers Lester.
Cripes, says Furlough. Unbelievable.
Just so, says the Threadmaster Hovis, smiling.
Just so.
And, listener, it is just so, isn't it? Coda. Do you remember when Despero was in the dungeon, cupped in Gregory the jailer's hand, whispering a story in the old man's ear? I would like it very much if you thought of me as a mouse, telling you a story, this story, with the whole of my heart, whispering it in your ear in order to save myself from the darkness, and to save you from the darkness too.
Stories are light, Gregory the jailer told Despero.
Listener, I hope you have found some light here.
This is Graham Malcolm. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Tale of Despero by Kate DiCamillo. This program was produced and directed by John Wager, executive producer Orly Moskowitz, text copyright 2003, Kate DiCamillo, production copyright 2003, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment. It's a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary and improve their reading skills. It's an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways you can help ensure a lifelong love of literature and reading for the children you care about. If you would like more information about audiobooks, please visit our website at www.listeninglibrary.com. Thank you.